Blog Talk Radio.
I am Mother Nature, I am the universe. I can make a miracle. But my soul is getting weaker as the earth heart fades. People terrorize and spread their hate. Will humanity awaken before it's too late? I am Mother Nature.
Play that song at the end of the show one more time. We're going to play the whole complete version. Anyway, good evening, everyone. This is Luann Fleming. You're listening to Faceless Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed Channel, The Inside Scoop. I'm with my other co-host tonight, Robin Austin. Are you live with us?
Yes, I'm right here listening and looking forward to an excellent show. Welcome to the show, everyone. So glad you could join us.
Good, and we also have Hillary Helga's with us tonight from Florida. Hillary?
Hi, everyone. Hope everyone's doing well. I'm really excited about our show tonight.
Yeah, really excited. And Marcy Friedman has the night off. She might call in later. I'm not sure yet. Anyway, today is May 20th, 2020. Gosh, 3 months ago today, my mom passed away, so I'm kind of like going, oh, 3 months already. Oh, love you, Mom. Anyway, we have a really exciting show for you guys tonight. I mean, I've been talking to this candidate running for sheriff last night, and it was just, last couple of days, actually. And what he has to say is unbelievable, and you don't realize that sheriff offices, sometimes could be so corrupt, and you wonder why aren't the police helping situations. What's really going on in these towns? What can we do to change the experience that we're having out there? How can we get it to have a really good sheriff in town? Now, the reason I speak about this law a lot is my father-in-law used to be the chief of police in Aurora, Colorado. So I know exactly how it works, except for I was used to the sheriff part of it, but just the chief of police. And he had control of pretty much of the chief of police here in Aurora. And it was really interesting being married to, having a father-in-law as the chief of police. So, trust me, my husband got away with a lot of things back then, but not anymore because he passed away. But anyway, I just had to put that in there. So I understand when we talk about how we talk about the police issues and the sheriff issues. Back in the day, we used to not have as many problems. I mean, I don't remember it being this bad, back in the day when I was married to him. So I just wanted to lay that out there. But tonight, let me tell you a little bit about our guest first. He is James McGlynnis, and James is running for sheriff in Pinellas County, Florida, in November 2020 election. James says that anybody, now listen to this, anybody has the ability to run for sheriff, which caught me by surprise too, by the way. Anyway, he says, my platform as candidate for sheriff is to stop arresting people over a plant and all cannabis enforcement, don't violate people's rights, stop policing for profit, stop initiating violence on peaceful people, treat all people with dignity and respect, investigate and solve actual crimes with real victims and hold police accountable. James McGlynnis lives a few blocks from Gente Jersey, and we all know about that story out there, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on the show. And she was forced into guardianship and recently died from COVID-19. What could James do to help us stop guardianship abuse? So we have a lot of things to talk about. And so we're going to warmly invite our guest in. His name is James, everybody. James, are you with us tonight?
I am. And hello from Pinellas County, Florida.
Hi, and thanks so much for being with us. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yes. So we've, you know, you and I were talking a lot about the problem with the police and the sheriff. Can you go ahead and just talk about what's the duty of the police and what's the duty of the sheriff, so we can go between the two of those first?
Yeah, both of the agencies, the sheriff and the police, each have their own separate set of problems, even though the problems are very similar. A lot of corruption, a lot of abuse, a lot of ill. Police that are not doing what they're supposed to do, falsifying reports, arresting people for no reason, arresting people for minor and petty offenses. All of these things are common across the entire police industry. And if you just let's say you Google police abuse, you're going to come up with 5 or 10 million hits on something as simple as that. And so they have to ask yourself, well, how are the problems directly related? How are they getting the bad? And when you deal with police, we're talking about policemen, police officers that work at police departments. They are typically headed up by a police chief or a police captain. The gentleman is typically hired at will by the mayor and the city council. And what I mean by at will is, if that police chief doesn't do what the mayor and the city council tell him to do, they will fire him. So when the city council and the mayor tell the police chief, we need more revenue, he's going to go out and write more tickets. And when they mm-hmm. he does something corrupt, as long as he's keeping an eye out for the city council members and the mayor and protecting them and their families and their friends and their business interests, nothing will happen to them. And now you take that and you then move it over to the sheriff's president. The sheriff's president is completely different. Of course, they're both police agencies. They both have a lot of corruption within them, the same sort of things going on. But a sheriff is an elected official. It's a constitutionally or generated office. Usually the state constitution gives the sheriff their power. And in a sheriff's position, a sheriff is a lot more powerful than the police are. A sheriff doesn't answer to any city or county or the board of commissioners or anyone other than even the governor. And the governor himself has a very difficult time removing the sheriff. He has to have a lot of cause, and there's a lot of things to go through if they're going to take a sheriff out of office. So you have a sheriff that's elected into the office, and the people get the right to choose the sheriff. But the problem is most people, most communities don't pick their sheriff. The sheriff himself will usually pick his predecessor from his crony, which gives you the same problem that you've always had. And that's why we have the problems that we have across the board, because there really isn't anybody being allowed to be a good cop anymore.
Right. We seem to be fading in and out a little bit. Is there anything that you can do to clear up your channel down there?
How about the speakerphone? Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just talk
it's
about
much better. It's better.
Okay, go ahead. So go ahead and say that one more time about what happens when, just what you were just saying a little bit ago, why you can't really vote too much down there. Why that doesn't happen.
You can vote for a sheriff, but there's something that's going on. I actually wrote a complete history of the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. And I was really surprised to find out that 60% of the 14 sheriffs that we've had since the beginning of sheriffs here in Pinellas County since 1912 were appointed rather than elected. And here in Pinellas County, we haven't had a sheriff take over the sheriff's office that hasn't been appointed for the last 35 years. And what I mean by that
wow.
is a sheriff will, knowing he's going to leave, it's what I call a chain of command inbreeding. And so a sheriff has the power to win the election. He gets the name. He's been in office. Like a lot of people that are in offices, like judges and mayors, a lot of times they'll continue to win election after election just because everybody knows their name, so they vote for them. And it's the same thing with a sheriff. So when a sheriff gets
right.
that power and he has the ability to win the election, even if he thinks he's going to quit, even if he thinks he's going to retire, he'll go ahead and he'll win the next election. And sometime during his term of election, he'll go ahead and retire or resign. And when he does, the governor will then appoint a new sheriff. So the old exiting sheriff will actually be able to pass the baton to his next in command or who he wants to be a sheriff that's going to run things exactly the way that he did, just as
right.
corrupt as he did, and keep a lid on the dirt and keep it all swept under the rug, just like he did.
Mm-hmm.
So then when this sheriff is appointed, he gets into the office, he'll rebrand the sheriff's office, spend, you know, hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of dollars putting his name all over everything, and then he'll do public service announcements. Everybody gets used to him being the sheriff before the next coming election. So the people of the county never actually get to choose their own sheriff. they are pre-chosen from them by the police industry. And that's what's really asinine about what occurs all across the country, that we don't elect our own sheriffs. We only elect the ones they pick for us.
Wow. Yeah, I was, and you called that the chain of command inbreed, right?
That's what I call it. It's a phrase that I coined, chain of command inbreed, yes.
Right, and no one ever would think that that happens, but when you were telling me that yesterday, I'm like, oh, boy. And you said for 35 years?
Yes, it's been over 35 years since a sheriff got into office initially by being elected. Now, once they're appointed, they can usually win the next election because they've already got the name brand recognition. They're already wearing the uniform. And they will actually, like they do here, they illegally go to campaign functions dressed as the sheriff in the sheriff's uniform, which is a violation of campaign law. And it's those little things that they do to put themselves over the top. Here in Pinellas County, our sheriff, he gets a certain amount of budget for public service announcements. And if he's in office for 4 years, what he'll do is service announcements for the first 3.5 years. And then in the 6 months before his next election, he will do every single one of his 140 public service announcements and use them as campaign ads.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dirty system.
It's a really dirty system. So how do you plan on going in there and cleaning it up? I mean, and how are you going to get in voted in there if it's really hard to even get in there in the first place? I mean, hopefully you can make a lot of people aware of this, you know?
Well, I'm doing a lot of things that are completely different. And then the current climate of the COVID-19 lockdowns, shutdowns, and social distancing has really changed the whole face of elections. You can't do all the things that you used to be able to do, like, you know, going to campaign events and going to rallies and things like that. You just can't have that social interaction anymore. So that's going to work against a normal sheriff, a candidate, an incumbent who's used to operating in that realm. Now, social media is more powerful. Doing YouTube videos is more powerful. Having a strong message online is more powerful. And that's one of the ways that I'm going to be bringing my message. Thing that I'm doing that's different than every other sheriff candidate I've ever encountered or researched is I'm taking my campaign national, meaning I'm going all around the entire United States, and I'm campaigning for donations, and I'm campaigning for people to support me. And unlike the last election in 2016, I just thought I could just go ahead and tell people what I'm doing here and explain what my position is, and people are going to be welcoming that. But I wasn't really expecting the corruption of the local media, the local newspapers who endorsed Sheriff Gualtieri, who literally blackballed me from any exposure whatsoever. And so I realized in the past election that I've got to figure out a way to get around that. And going to a national platform where I have people donating to my campaign from all over the country is helping me generate the funds that I will need to actually purchase marketing and advertising here in Pinellas County.
That's excellent, actually. I can see that exactly. Robin, are you still with us?
I sure am. Yeah, it sounds like you're at the you're sort of at the crest of the wave of a new paradigm. The what has happened with COVID-19, our whole society is shifting in ways that have changed the political landscape, and. Mm-hmm. You are sharp enough and intelligent enough to see how that change has affected things and to be able to position yourself. I see like the surfer that is able to read the waves and sees way out there a wave coming in and says, okay, there's my wave. If I start paddling right about here, I can catch that wave and get right at the top of it and get a nice long ride. I used to play in the ocean a lot, and that's what I would do when I was out in the ocean. But I see it kind of like that. It's you're understanding the approach to the political landscape that is going to be effective in a way that that the old guard has never even thought of, because they've never had to do that. They've never had to, you know, they've had this rigged game going. But it involves doing things in particular ways, and so I'm very hopeful, and kind of excited to hear that you've got this kind of approach, because I see the logic in it. I see how it could very well work tremendously in your favor, in a way that they may not see coming until it's too late and you're the new sheriff in town.
Well, I'm trying to not only do this for myself, but I'm also trying to use myself as an example to show other people, other activists, other people that want to make changes in their communities, how it's done. And we have a
right.
situation here where, if I were to just try and spin my magic here in Pinellas County, I'm going to lose that race. But I have a different view. I think and I consider the police, the sheriff, the police industry, not only here in Pinellas, but all across the country, I consider them one entity, the police industry. And there's a lot of people around this country that are sick and tired and fed up with the police industry and all of the abuses and the record numbers of killings and the police getting away with murder after murder, and that they're planting evidence and nothing ever happens to them. And there's a current across the United States where people are just sick and damn tired of it. And what do they do? What can that person do? Well, it's my position that if I can put my message out there nationally, there's people all over this country that would say, hey, if there's actually a non-law enforcement officer, because I am not a cop, if there's a non-law enforcement officer that's going to run for sheriff, and he's talking about going in there and straightening this mess up, and he's not indoctrinated in that whole corrupt police industry, then you know what? I'm going to throw that guy $50. I'm going to throw that guy $100. And, you know, if he can actually make it there, then maybe it can happen all across the country. And that's what I'm trying to do with my message. Tap into that anger across the United States.
Right. Kind of like a grassroots, revolution. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the corruption has anything to do with the fact that Sheriff Gualtieri is married to a judge?
No, I think the fact that his wife is a judge is a direct result of him being corrupt.
Right.
Now, his wife was appointed as a judge through what's known as a merit selection process. And what a merit selection process is, if there's a vacancy on the bench coming up, anybody who's interested in that position, again, we're talking about appointing someone before the election, the person's retiring or quitting, just like that inbreeding, chain of command inbreeding, it happens with the judges too. So the judge is going to retire midterm, it leaves an opening, that person's going to be filled with an appointment from the governor. And so everyone who's interested, the assistant state attorneys, local lawyers, whomever, all put their name in a hat. Then they go through this merit selection process where they go through a series of interviews. Well, here in Pinellas, about 2 weeks into that process, that's usually about 6 to 8 weeks long, a state attorney at the Pinellas County State Attorney's Office was witnessed throwing an absolute fit, kicking garbage cans, throwing stuff across the office. And he was telling a couple of police officers that told me that he was mad because they told him that he wasn't going to get the position, that it was already being set aside for Laura Lee Westby, and that she was going to get the position, so it didn't make any sense for him to bother going through the rest of these interviews.
Right.
And that was 6 weeks before the process was supposed to be completed. And so I wrote an article about that 6 weeks before she was appointed, pointing out that she was nothing more than a cell tower site lawyer. All she did was secure land for cell towers for the last 7 years. How does that qualify her to sit on a bench and be a judge? It doesn't. And so I wrote that article 6 weeks before the appointment, and I said, if she gets appointed, we'll know that this is true. And sure enough, she got appointed when she was the least qualified of all the candidates. And now that she's in office, she is making a mess of it up there. She's famous so far for putting the wife of a man going through it in jail for 5 months because she liked a Facebook page.
Wow. Whoa. Weren't you saying earlier how you got arrested and something about a 10-year-old daughter? What happened with that?
Oh, well, it's a long story, and actually the first half of that story is on my McLinnis4Sheriff.com website. And basically I had an ex-wife that had gotten involved in OxyContin hydrocodone, and that changes people, and it was causing problems, and we wound up going through a very difficult time, and I kicked her to the curb. Well, when I did that, she went ahead and she associated herself with multiple deputies, both Clearwater Police and Pinellas County Sheriff. And then these deputies started harassing me, following me, doing illegal things, stalking me, using their police powers, pulling me over. I even got a traffic ticket out in front of my house for not having my daughter's seat belted when we hadn't even left the curb yet. And it was relentless. And finally, I was able to, my daughter came home with my my ex-wife's cell phone in her backpack. And it was open. I started looking at all these messages from all these different deputies around and these Clearwater police officers. And they're saying that they've contacted my judge, that he won't listen to me anymore in our custody case. F him. It's time for him to get F'd. And all this stuff in here. And then it dawned on me, so that's where all this is coming from. I thought I just lived in a Nazi state. I didn't know that it was targeted against me. So when I started filing complaints against our sheriff about what these deputies were doing, not only did Sheriff Gualtieri not do anything about the deputies, he circled the wagon and protected them. And this emboldened them to treat me even worse. And finally, I got fed up to the point that I said, listen, this is ridiculous. You know, it's corrupt all the way up to your office. I've made all these complaints. You haven't done anything about it. So I'm going to run against you for sheriff in the 2016 election to expose your corruption. Well, a week later, he had my 10-year-old daughter arrested and handcuffed because he thought it would enrage me to the point where I would do something stupid,
God.
And they could do something to me. Two weeks after I announced, he had me arrested on 4 false felony charges. He used a Stingray tracking device to have me tracked down to make sure that I was arrested the day before my final custody hearing so I would lose my daughter.
Wow.
That's how dirty they are.
Jesus. So, oh, my gosh. So you talked earlier about anybody has the ability to be a sheriff. Now, I thought that you would have to be a police officer. I thought you had to be all this to be a sheriff, but you don't.
No.
Explain
a sheriff
that.
Is an elected, a sheriff is an elected position created by the Constitution of most states. So your state has a constitution. This constitution is what created the office of the sheriff and gave the sheriff its powers. And it's the same thing as a county clerk. It's the same thing as a tax assessor. All of these are what they call constitutional offices. Now, just like a mayor, just like a tax collector, I don't have to have been a mayor my whole life. I don't have to be a career mayor in order to run to be a mayor, do we? I mean, you have people that are elected mayors that have never been a mayor in their life, and that's perfectly fine. So the sheriff's office is really nothing more than an administrative position, keeping an eye on public workers, public servants, who happen to wear badges and guns. There is no real rocket science to it. There is no reason why someone who is not an LEO cannot be the sheriff, and they've convinced us that that is, in fact, the case, which is why we continue to have the corruption. If you have a non-LEO like me, I'm not indoctrinated in the thin blue line of silence. I'm not going to be covering up for deputies. I'm not going to feel like it's us against the people. I'm going to be in there working for the people and making sure that the officers behave themselves. And that's
right. You're
that
not an insider. You have
exactly.
No affiliation to any of them, and you will call it like it is. It's good
yes.
Or it's bad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people accuse me of being a cop hater. How can you run the sheriff's office when you hate police? And I don't hate police. In fact, it's my position, and it's the position of many other long-term police officers that I've spoken with, that every single police agency across the country is usually separated into thirds. You're going to have one-third of the police officers that are as rotten as the day is long, racist, like to beat people up for fun, you like the power trip on the badge and enjoy bullying people around. That's going to be about one-third of your average police force. You then have the other third, which are good guys. They got there to be a police officer for the good reasons. They want to help people. They're compassionate. They care about their community. They want to do the right thing. And those guys are usually picked on. And then you have the middle third who will typically go whichever way whoever they're partnered with. So if they happen to be hanging around with a bad cop that day, they'll be bad. If they hang around with a good cop that day, they'll be good. So basically what I'm intending on doing is getting into the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, terminating the bad third. I'm going to promote the good third and put them in charge of the middle third and hope we can straighten them out.
Right. God, that sounds so good. I mean, geez, that would be – and, you know, when you set in an example across the country, I think that's awesome. because it really does need to change. I mean, we get so many complaints, you know, about guardianship abuse, and that's what I want to talk about next. Is there was a Jenny Dursey that was dragged off into a guardianship down there that you said you only live a few blocks. You lived from really close to her. What, about 6 blocks?
Yes,
or something like that?
Yeah, I drive by her hotel all the time. It's literally just about 3 miles down the road from me.
Right. And so what they did is nobody interfered. Nobody did absolutely nothing. This lady was dragged right off into a guardianship. They went after the nephew. And then recently she just passed away from COVID-19. And there was really nothing wrong with her. You talked to her, she talked like everybody else did. What could be done about that as you being sheriff? I mean, a lot of people are frantic about what could happen to them being dragged into a guardianship.
Well, a lot of the problems that happen with her is her relatives, her family members, the young man that she had offered to sell one of these units to that angered the realtor who was trying to buy it, he filed complaints. Jenny Dursey herself called the police and asked to have a restraining order to keep that realtor away from her house and to have her stop coming around and bothering her. And the police took no action. When they complained
absolutely
about what these guardians
not
were doing, the police took no action. When you call the police, if you call the police on a government agent, meaning somebody that works for the government, somebody that's in a capacity as a guardianship, who has been appointed by one of the judges who are all part of the problem, they are not going to do anything for you. And the reason is both police and sheriffs all sign an oath of office. And the oath specifically says that I swear that I will defend and protect the Constitution and the government of the United States and the state of Florida. That's the oath. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say a damn thing in there about working for the people, protecting the people, being a public servant, protecting and serving. That's absent. So a lot of these police officers, all of these police officers, typically think they are nothing more than the bodyguards of the government, which in a lot of cases they are. So you call the bodyguard of the government to file a complaint against the government, and how do you think that bodyguard of the government is going to act towards you?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow, something to think about.
It's so
but
true.
But I'm really glad you're on here to explain this, because I would have, we don't know as a regular citizen what goes on behind all that, but when you're explaining it, I'm starting to understand how this all works, this big, well-oiled machine, you know. So, and you also talk about Jenny Dursey. I really believe that they just put her into guardianship to take that property. From what I heard from a lot of people, she had a beautiful property there. And they took her and they put her right into there, and you saw the video of one of the ladies there grabbing her purse and Jenny's sitting there screaming, "Don't take that, don't take that." I mean, the police would not do absolutely nothing about that, and to me, I think that's a disgrace.
Of course it is. And her property itself was an older hotel, and there's a lot of those around here, but her location was prime, and the property that she owned was probably slated for development. It was not in its highest and best use, and I guarantee you there were developers that had their eye on that property, and a lot of times the developers are tied in with the politicians. So you have a developer that wants a piece of property. It's not uncommon for that developer to call DCF and to call in a complaint and to try and get these people kicked off the property using one of these dozens of methods like guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, and I think that's awesome that you understand what's going on in the guardianship abuse arena. And it's something like $3 to $5 trillion industry, what they're doing to all of our elders and the disabled people. And that's one thing we want to do is we want to try to get a better law enforcement in there, so the officers can understand what's going on and take care of that before the situation gets out, because there's no way that she should have lost her life because of her property.
Mm-hmm.
Hillary talks a lot about that. Right, go ahead.
If I could just say something, I mean, my dad was put into a terrible guardianship that I miraculously got him out of in Naples, but we have called Gualtieri. We have spoken to Steve Bingham and, I mean, Eric Lipton.
Renee Bauer, who's prosecuting the guardian of Ms. Jersey for stealing over $500,000 from an elderly person that lost his daughter. And we are looked at right now, maybe not as much, but everyone says, oh, you know, you're sore losers, nothing to see here. And even the inspector general's office has said, oh, no, you know, there's nothing. They're just, you know, activists gone wrong. And it is absolutely insane. We have, like you, James, you have seen, you've given them evidence, and they have completely pushed it aside, as we have with guardianship cases. We have shown them that the lawyers, that the judges, that the guardians, they are out for one thing only, and that is money. Money, 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 but it is so corrupt. And I always say, you know, I'm from New York. The New York Italian Mafia, at least they leave women, children, and the elderly alone. But the guardianship mafia in Pinellas County, they don't care who you are. If you have money, they will go after you. And we have no one to go to help us. And we hope that this will be you when you're elected.
Yeah.
Well, I can assure you that when I am elected, that I will absolutely positively be making a change here. And one of the things that should be focused on, one of the main considering factors should be, what does the elderly person themselves want? And when you went through Jenny Jersey's whole case, not one single time did anything she said she wanted ever get considered. I watched a video of her asking the court, just leave me alone, leave me alone. And the judge didn't even meet her eyes. They glance away. They read their papers and shuffle their papers. They literally ignore her.
You're so right. You're so right. And we've been begging for help. We've been begging. I mean, I went in front of, I think 2 weeks ago, the county commissioners had their meeting, and they were talking about, well, you know, people want their manicures, their pedicures. They want to go and eat in the restaurants. And then I said, you know, I am here on behalf of Jenny Durst, who is on her deathbed with COVID-19, and we have been asking to release her. Like a prisoner, but she has committed no crime. Please help me. And basically, one of the doctors did, but Sheriff Gualtieri, he gave, you know, he had a little smirk on his face, like, I really don't give a shit.
Well, he doesn't. They don't. I've been to county commissioner meetings here, and it's first off, I really get annoyed by the fact that they spend all of our tax money to have that great big wooden barrier that they all sit up, and then they give you 3 minutes to speak, and none of them ever comment on your what you said. They don't say, okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. They literally sit up there and ignore you like pompous asses, and that has to end.
And you know what? Anybody can sheriff too now, and it's a lot of people are to start running for sheriff. I mean, I remember this one guy that ran out here in Colorado, and he said he was running for sheriff. I'm like, really? You can do that? and it's true, because I relate that to what you're saying, and it's absolutely true. It's just like any other office. So that's good news. If anybody else wants to follow in your footsteps and start changing this, it's awesome, you guys.
It's really such an important office. It is such an
it's really
important office
that
an average citizen should be able to call, whether they're in St. Pete, Clearwater, and say, look, I have this woman who's harassing me to sell my property, and I feel intimidated. Please help me. But that doesn't happen. And I have to be honest with you, there is a senior officer, and I will give his name, Joel Quattlebaum, who does nothing but work with the for-profit professional guardians. And that's a disgrace.
Right.
Yes, that's part of the whole corrupt system across the board. And we talked earlier about the fact that besides that, there's also a large group of elder practicing attorneys. who solicit these elderly people to help them manage their finances, and all they really do is go in and take an accounting of what they have and put themselves in a position of authority over those assets and then raid the assets when the people die before the family can get down here and figure out what's going on.
Right, if I can interrupt you, James, I mean, Terry Deeb, he is a former police officer in St. Pete, realtor, construction, and he is the kingpin in St. Pete. He is the person with his attorneys, whether it's Hachu Dow or Sarah McLean or whoever it is, Stephen Hitchcock, that are putting the elderly in guardianships for one reason only, to bleed their estate dry. And again, we've got to get the word out that because they call themselves elder attorneys, it does not mean that they're out for the betterment of the St. Petersburg community.
Exactly.
You know,
yes,
there's something that I would like to add, if I may, and that is, you said that they raid the estate before the family has the chance to get at it. But it's what we see not only in Florida, yes, in Florida, but also nationwide and internationally, is that this process of raiding begins immediately. That as soon as the person is put into a situation where they have this conservator appointed by a court, whatever, however it's called, it may be a guardian, it may be described as a conservator, but in any case, once that person is put into a position of authority, they take authority over the assets and the monies and the properties of that individual. And oftentimes, as soon as they're put into authority, they're immediately begin raiding those assets and liquidating all of the properties, raiding the bank accounts, and paying themselves and their cronies. Usually there's a group of them that will work together,
right.
and they'll be in a courtroom where the judge is kind of somehow, for some reason, certainly appears for all intents and purposes to be in on the deal, and they'll have three or four working together. One is a
instance,
one is a guardian, one is a conservator, one is a guardian ad litem, one is the attorney of a guardian, one is the attorney, court-appointed attorney of the person under guardianship, and so they'll have a group of four, five, six, seven people who they just take the money and they just start dividing it up, and they'll have meetings amongst themselves, and they'll generate a lot of pretend legal work that they're doing for someone, and really all they're doing is just raiding the estate and passing out the money to each other and generating paperwork to make it look like they're doing something that involves actually taking care of that person or doing a job, just for the sake of, just to give the judge something to say amen and pound the gavel and say, yes, you may take all of this money and distribute it to all of your friends. And, oh, by the way, I've got a mortgage in the background there that may just disappear mysteriously if someone happens to pay it off before I do. So that would be convenient, too. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And, this is I'm not making any of this up. I'm telling you things that we have investigated and discovered and found are being done. And so the only thing that it's not when the person dies, it's as soon as they are taken into a guardianship situation that they begin to get raided, robbed, imprisoned, isolated, drugged, and eventually murdered. And, when I hear that someone has been placed into a guardianship against their will, against the will of their family members who are willing to take care of them, and their estate is being drained, and their monies are being drained, and then they die of a disease that was easily avoidable if they had not been in that situation. To me, that is murder. We can all pretend that there's something civil about it. We can all pretend that there's something accidental about it.
Right.
But the intent was that this person would be robbed and killed, and that's what happened. And
So let's ask James, would you kind of consider that murder when someone just, if you or I or somebody else did that, we would be up for murder charges, period. If I went into someone's home and says you're I'm going to put you away, I'm going to lock you up, I'm taking your property, forget about your family member, that person goes in forced into a guardianship, and then that person dies of COVID-19. That is murder. I personally think that is. I mean, what else would it be?
Right. If I could just say one thing, and their only crime, the only crime that these beautiful, elderly, tax-paying citizens of Pinellas County have committed is growing old, having an estate or property, and living in Pinellas County. How can this be looked over? How can something not be done year after year after year? And people talk about elder abuse. This is the epitome of elder abuse, and it is being done by the members of the court as well as the police department that you are running to be the sheriff of.
Right, and I think it would be really awesome because Florida is a really hot spot down there, and there's places all over the United States, but we hear of, Pinellas County constantly. I mean, that and Michigan and parts of Colorado Springs and all these different places, and I think it would be awesome that he shows the country, the nation here, how it's supposed to be and start cleaning up that part of corruption. We owe these elders and these disabled people a lot. And this means not stripping them of their property. And, you know, if they want to give their property to their nephew, their kids, whatever, it needs to go that way. It really does. I mean, it's sickening.
I agree.
That, it's just
family
sickening,
helps,
you know?
Family, and who is an outsider, like a realtor, to petition the court because she's not happy with what happened because she won't be able to make a commission. And no one.
Yeah, and that realtor,
she really needs
to lose her job. Period. You know, I'd be going after her job because anybody that sends somebody in because they don't sell their property.
I'd say lose her job, and ultimately, when you are involved in a conspiracy, in a criminal conspiracy, then what needs to happen is a prosecution that results in jail time.
Right. Yeah,
I
agree. That's why I think James, I think that you're onto something here about setting an example for this too. I really do, because we can talk to a lot of police officers and a lot of sheriffs, and you know what? I had the problem in my family. I went to the police department to try to get help to get my mom away from my brother. They did absolutely nothing for me. They didn't even want to hear our story. They said, "Oh, I'm sorry, your brother was already here. Take it to court. Take it back to probate court." And that's where they were abusing her in the first place. The frustration you have. I understand the frustration that anybody, if they called up the police department and said, "Look, I need help," but the police are going to say, "I'm sorry, you got to go back to court," the place where they're assaulting you anyway. There's got to be something better that could be done about that. What's your thoughts on that? There's got to be something better.
Well, of course there's something better. In my opinion, the something better is to dismantle and stop what we have now. And a lot of these things, these laws, these rules, these regulations, they come from two different things. They come from a law that's been passed, an elder law, or they come from a court or a judge's order. And in reality, any law or any judge's order in the entire United States has absolutely zero effect if it can't be enforced. And typically, all these laws and all these rulings and all these judgments are literally enforced, the key word there being forced, by the police industry. Without the police industry, they're nothing but scribbles on paper. And every sheriff that's in that position has to be able to be conscious enough of the problem to be able to make judgment calls. Is that law proper to be applied in this case? What does the person who is standing before me, the elderly person, want? Are they capable of even expressing what they want? And when I listened to Jenny Dearcy, she was absolutely positively capable of expressing exactly what she wanted, and they ignored her. And that has to be dismantled. That system has to be attacked. And there's very few people that are in a position of power to attack a system like that, and a sheriff is.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
You know, I am so glad.
anything to get you elected. Because we need change.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you say that. Let me, if I may, that's a question that I was wanting to ask was, you know, these when a judge is issuing an order that is actually a direct violation of a person's civil rights, it's the police will use that and say, well, I'm compelled by a judge to do thus and such, but I'm glad to hear you say that that is a situation where a sheriff has to make a judgment call, because if you've got an unethical judge doing immoral and unethical things to individuals,
right,
who have rights, because they're in this country, our rights, we have rights that are guaranteed by the Constitution, by the law of the land, that ought to be enforced by law enforcement. And quite often, instead, you have these judges that write their own rules that are forced on people by the enforcement arm, which is law enforcement. And so I'm very glad to hear the term judgment call come
right
out of your mouth as a candidate for sheriff, because that means that the judge's order is something that the sheriff has to evaluate. They're not just a robot that carries out what this individual says. Well, go arrest this this person because they won't give their money to our court. They don't want to give up their property. We want to put them in guardianship, and they don't want that. So go arrest them and take them
right
and lock them in this facility for us. You know, that's at that point, really, it is a judgment call that needs to be made by that enforcement officer who says, hang on a minute now, what's the real story, and why am I being asked to do this, and, you know, is this ethical, is this moral, is this even legal under the laws that I'm here to be an enforcement officer for? If the answer is no, it's not ethical, it's not moral, and it's not legal, then that officer has to say, not going to do it. And, boy, now that kind of law enforcement would be something that I really could stand behind, officer.
Well, you could run for sheriff there. You could run for sheriff next year. Let me interrupt everybody for a second. If anybody wants to call into the show, you can do that very easily, and that's by picking up your own phone, and calling in this phone number. It's 845-241-9962. You press a 1. 845-241-9962. You press a 1, and that will let us know that you have a question or a comment. So I think I'm going to go ahead and bring Marcy, and she is waiting to talk to us. Marcy, are you with us? She's one of our other co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
Marcy?
Yes, I am. How's everyone?
Good.
Hello,
good,
Marcy.
How are you?
Great.
I'm doing
good.
Great, and I'm so glad to hear that an ethical person is going to run for sheriff and sees exactly what's going on. And I agree for asking the ward what do they want, but the problem is that in some cases, like my mother, she was diagnosed with dementia in 2011, and she never wanted to leave. And she was removed from her home in 2014, and then they have isolated her. And then they brainwash her. She tells the judge that she wants to see me, and the judge says they can see each other. And then the visits
right
don't happen. And the isolation continues. And how would that take three judges, five court orders to enforce the citation?
Right.
Mom and I had made plans. We showed up. The police were called. They didn't make her available. They are in contempt of court, and these people are still not held accountable. And
yeah,
so,
but you know what? That might That might be a good thing to ask James, because you have it in writing that you could actually visit her. Now they're blaming it on
no,
COVID-19.
No. now, since the last court hearing, the isolators, because they are isolating my mother, were told by the judge that in writing and in order that the visit needed to happen in 30 days.
Well, some feedback.
They didn't make it, but let me finish because then I lose my train of thought. The visit was supposed to be made within 30 days. It was not. When I sent a letter to the judge, it took them 7 days after they heard about the corona. Then they each wrote an affidavit saying that they were not going to continue interrupting the visit. I was able to talk to my mother only once after that. She couldn't wait for me to see her, and now it goes to voicemail. And they have cruelly continued isolation before COVID and during COVID. So during all this time where everyone is worried about their elderly parent, and my mother, the one time I was able to speak to her, so excited, she has not been able to speak to her daughter because these people continue to isolate my mother. And I have called the police. They've showed up. And because one of the isolators is an officer of the law, because she is a cop, she continues to violate her oath and protect her brother, who's also isolating her. And then
I get harassed
from letters from this officer.
Right. So that's why I wanted to talk to James. Yeah, that's why I wanted to talk to James about your case, because if he was sheriff in that county, I think things would have been different.
It would never happen.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. Because my mother has always said that she wanted to see me. And I went to guardianship because she was at risk of exploitation to the very same people that are doing it. And you know what? It should never take three judges. And these people are all officers of the court. So, and I hope that she doesn't get killed and lose her life because she has fallen. She has been overdosed. I have put in reports and nothing gets done. The criminals continue to get away with the crime. And then I'm wondering that if we can go as advocates to the police department and create awareness of what it is going on as advocates and what the laws are. And if some of the police departments would be open to that, because I know that there's a girl, that Lori in Los Angeles, in California, she's done that over there. And she said it's been very effective. So she's done something that has actually worked. So maybe we can do it every place if they would allow us. I would be glad to give it our
James on here talking about. That's what I'm saying. James on here talking about changing the system out there in Florida. It needs to be changed huge. And the corruption that's going on with your family is nonstop, all of lots of Florida.
Nonstop.
Colorado. Michigan is going on across the whole United States. And I really do think that if a person could actually go and talk to the sheriff or police officer, and they say, well, go to the sheriff, and you could talk to that sheriff, I think the sheriff, like James, would say, oh, here we got an isolation thing going on. Let's let her see her mother. She has an okay. See, it would be so much better process, you know, instead of them saying,
I'm sorry, court.
I have even gone to the police department in Sunny Isle Beach when she came and she didn't want to go. And I took her, and they took her in, and then they didn't let me have her back. They called the isolator, one of the five grandchildren, and of course she's a cop. And so, you know what? Badge power. Right. That's what it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so I've got Mother Color, let's go ahead and move on. Marcy, you can stay on the phone with us. We're going to bring in Kathy. Kathy, you with us?
Hi, how are y'all?
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Kathy is from Texas, so go ahead. Question?
So I
and
just
if I can
learned
just
interrupt
some... Kathy has done phenomenally at helping us in Florida, and she has been a big part of the guardianship reform and activism in Florida and Pinellas County.
I just came across a new abuse, new to me, I didn't know about it, that is, it was reported by ProPublica and another news agency. I don't remember the other one. It might have been NPR, but I'm not sure. How Black Americans are with diabetes are disproportionately being subjected to amputations, like large numbers of them. I just came across a case in El Paso, Texas, where this is alleged to also be an occurred to Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
Amputating their legs instead of getting them medical care. And we're talking large numbers of them, not a isolated case or two, large numbers.
Uh-huh.
Has anybody heard anything about this?
No, I haven't.
No.
I have not.
Well, there's
a
gentleman that, is just starting through the process of a guardianship in El Paso. He was taken from his home without, from what I understand, no court order by ATS. He was put in one facility and then later moved to another facility. None of this under any court supervision that I can tell. I haven't reviewed the actual records. I'm just going by the victim's family and what they say. So he was detained since January, no court orders. I guess they had some kind of court order originally to start some kind of APS investigation, but that thing expired. They didn't get another one. Anyways, his wife has been, of course, throwing a fit, and she says they put him in a facility where everybody there, their legs are amputated. And when she first told me that, I was like, what? And then I started coming across these news articles that this is happening in something like Mississippi, other southern states. This is happening where they are large numbers amputating minorities' legs.
And Kathy,
I understand why a lot of things go on, but that's really strange, I tell you.
Right, but the thing is that we do not know if this is happening in Pinellas County, because as of today, the Governor DeSantis, is very, very angry at a young lady who said that she was told to underreport numbers of the elderly that are dying of COVID-19. None of the numbers that we have of people with, people diagnosed, and people dying of COVID-19 are accurate.
Right.
What do you think about that, Jane?
Background, I'm getting a lot of feedback, and if someone's not speaking, please mute your phone. You can do that. Otherwise, it's going to come out kind of choppy. We don't want that live on the air. Yeah. So that's interesting. That's what I can say. I'm not sure why all that's going on. I really don't.
Are they doing that to create a disability payment scheme for these people, or are they doing it to prevent them from having to spend lots of money for medical expenses for these people?
What do you think, Kathy?
Well, it's a good question. I do know that this victim in El Paso, she's been trying to get her husband out of the facility. Keep in mind, there's no court order keeping him there, right, until this week. And she's gone to the sheriff, she's gone to local police, she's gone to FBI, she's gone to Texas Rangers, and they all turn her away and say it's a civil matter. It is not. If he is being detained someplace, that's kidnapping. That's not civil, right? If there's no court order, and that no one will show her a court order, and she says there is no court order. But during this time, she says they've been drugging him. He's lost a ton of weight. He's got a morphine drip, and they have an ankle monitor around his leg, like he's a prisoner.
Wow.
So I don't know. I don't know what their motivation is. I do know that if he's not getting medical care for his diabetes or whatever, that is a violation of the Jimmo settlement for sure. It blew my mind when I came across this case and I started hearing about it. And then she's telling me that many people, everybody that she sees in that facility, are missing legs. And I'm like, what in the world is that all about? And then I started coming across news orders or articles from major news outlets saying it's happening in other states.
Well, one of the things that seems to be a reoccurring theme throughout all of this, both the amputation cases you're talking about and Marcy's case, is that there is the isolation and the separation. And if somebody does not have the legal authority to tell somebody you can't leave, then that's literally could be construed as kidnapping. It could also be construed as unlawful detainment. It could be construed as all types of different violations of these people's rights. And from my perspective, if I see something like that going on, I know how I would solve it. If there's an assisted living facility that's not going to let somebody come visit their family members or will not allow access, I would just walk in there and put one of those people in handcuffs and arrest them for kidnapping and let that shockwave go through the whole community. You want to keep these people away? You want to separate them? You want to take them away from their family members and not allow them to have family members in as they're aging? That's one of the most important things for them to have, is contact
exactly.
and communication with their family members.
I would say number one problem we face is the isolation. We can ask the others, but that's, from my point of view, the number one problem. Because when you have isolation, that person is such a vulnerable victim. They can't outcry. They can't tell you what's going on. They can't get help. A lot of these nursing facilities don't even have telephones in the rooms. Now, President Trump deregulated a lot of stuff from nursing homes. That used to be one of the regulations, that they have a phone in their room. They need to be able to call 911 if they need it. Because let's face
it,
right?
These
nursing homes are short-staffed. They may not be responsive. Something may have happened in the night when they have reduced staff. And these vulnerable people need to be able to call in an emergency. But they also have the right and the freedom to call their friends and family.
If there is a separation, in my opinion, that's a huge red flag and warning sign. If there's an isolation, that's an elder abuse.
Right. You were telling us earlier once, James, I was talking to you earlier, you actually knew of another lady that was isolated, that was a friend of yours, and they did the same thing to her. You were telling me.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was dying in hospice care. And they and the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, I was her primary caregiver. I was her surrogate. I was also her POA. And the assisted living facility did not want me to remove her from the facility, so they called the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department. And the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department actually trespassed me from being by her bedside while she was in hospice dying. And she died by herself there for 5 days. They didn't feed her. They didn't take care of her, and she died. And I was never even allowed access to her body. I don't even know what happened to her. So
I don't think these facilities should be allowed to exploit the trespassing laws to prevent family, surrogates, POAs. I don't think they should be able to issue a trespassing. They are not – yes, I know they are a private business and they have private property, but they're really on the border. They're not really a private facility. You know what I mean? When they're housing your loved ones, it is different. And I do think we need to work through our legislators and get that changed. Because
the trespassing comes, though, from law enforcement. Again, law enforcement is the trespass. And unless the person is literally causing harm to people, screaming, yelling, threatening people, there's really no reason to trespass anybody. And if they have a family member in there, they should have access, period. there should be no trespassing. And if my officers went out to an assisted living facility and there was an elderly person in there and their family members wanted to be seeing them, and the facility was saying trespass them and get them off the property, I would take action against the facility, not the people that were wanting to see their family members.
Well, I mean, that's what we want to hear. And if I could just say, which I always do, and I'm in my early 50s, I've never been sued before, but I have been sued twice by a for-profit professional guardian, and I have two no trespassing orders against me. One, because I tried to go and help Marcy see her mother that she hasn't seen it or spoken to in a long time. And also, I went with Jeremiah Pakalnis on Christmas Eve, 2018, to see his aunt on Christmas Eve, and Inspired Living at Ivy Ridge trespassed me again. And
after you took all the steps to call the sheriff, to call the police or whatever and say, how do we go and see his aunt? And they told you how to do it. And then when you did it, then they did that.
Right. So I called beforehand, the day before, James, and I spoke to a nice woman, and she said, oh, no problem. Just on your way, when you're 10 minutes before you get to the facility, just call us, and we'll send a keep the peace officer, and they will facilitate the visit with you and the nephew. And that's exactly what we did. And, of course, this officer came from the sheriff's department, didn't take off his dark sunglasses, and in the end, we were both given no trespassing orders. You can't make this stuff up. What do you think about that?
One of the ways that I would address what's going on here as sheriff is very, very simple, and that is you don't send out a thug with a nightstick to deal with a sensitive situation. You know, a police officer goes through 6-8 months of training. Most of their training is how to beat up and shoot people. It's not how to deal with these types of situations. And what people don't realize is the sheriff's office has the ability to hire non-LEOs, regular citizens that are good at this sort of thing, and I literally have the ability to give that person a badge. Now, the badge that I would give a lay person is not the same as a badge that you would give an officer. There's no arrest powers with it, but you can put that badge up in their face, and these people can go to these facilities and do exactly what you were saying, do a keep the peace situation where the officer stands there and makes sure that the visitation is allowed and that the facility doesn't interfere, not the other way around.
Wow. You can also get training and certifications and stuff for law enforcement officers in psychology, in counseling. I've come across several law enforcement officers that they actually are sent out for, like, if somebody threatens suicide, for example, or a teenager that's distressed, some kind of emotional thing. And yes, they're a police officer, but they had like 20 years of experience in counseling. And I think it's really important, you know, with domestic violence, with all kinds of stuff, elder abuse. I think it's really important for every sheriff's department to have people like that with that kind of training.
Yeah, it would be nice to have qualified officers like that. But what a lot of people don't realize is it takes about $125,000 to $150,000 per officer just to get them to the point where they're an officer day one. And there's no reason to have all that training to do completely the opposite of what this type of a task would entail when there are people out there with degrees in social services and minor degrees in psychology that could do these jobs without having to then pay another $150,000 to train them to do them. They already know. All you have to do is go there, observe the situation, and do the right thing. How hard is that? It's not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole different light on that subject, too. It's all interesting. It's all very interesting. Wow. Gosh.
Well, you guys keep your ears peeled about this amputation thing, because this is two different states now. I've heard about it this week. And we're talking hundreds or thousands of victims, not onesie twosie.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll do some research
that's
on that.
Scary, man. Why would they? I just don't get.
Because in my account.
Yeah. All right. Well, if we hear anything,
what's
Kathy, we'll let you know.
Hey, Marcy.
Go ahead.
Luann, I think that one of the tactics that the courts have used, or the court-appointed attorneys that are not
mm-hmm.
ethical, what they do is they, even if the person is deemed medically incapacitated, they don't, the courts are not incapacitating them, but they say that they're not capable of running their properties. So what they're doing is they're going around the guardianship process, and then they prepare powers of attorneys, and then they slip it right in, and the wrong judge that doesn't have the best benefit for the elderly signs
right.
off of it, and that's when the fraud comes in. And then they isolate them because they let them keep their rights as to where they want to live. So if they go back to their house
Look,
or to their sons
the,
or daughters,
the bottom line is,
of course they want to stay.
The
and,
bottom
and
line
so,
is they're making the Yeah, but the bottom line is these guardians don't have any training. They're not social workers. They don't have medical training. They don't
right.
have financials. They're not CPAs. They're just laymen, and they're putting an entire person as servitude to them.
Yes.
And everything they say goes. I don't even know where the system came from.
They,
it's just the most
even,
bizarre.
They don't even have to have any training because
no.
it's all thought out. It's all planned between all these people. How it's going to be, and if, you know, I and to finish, and then I'm going to finish it. If you let me finish
mm-hmm.
1 second, because I lose my train of thought, excuse me. What happens is they plot this. So then they isolate the medically, mentally incapacitated person because they gave her the right or gave him the right to decide who they can see, but they don't let them because they isolate them, and then whenever they go in front of a judge or they speak to the son or daughter and they want to go, they keep saying, oh, but she told us or he told us
right.
that she doesn't
right.
want to go. And then it keeps going on like a merry-go-round, up and down, and the judges believe the isolators. And that
See,
is where the
problem is-
lies.
The problem is, Marcy, is that a lot of these judges will say that senior has the right to choose who they want to go with, but little do they know, or they do know, that elderly person has been so severely brainwashed, they wouldn't know how to talk about it in the first place. They've already been
exactly.
told how to hate that other person. So they can't possibly make up their mind. They can't make up their own mind anymore. That
exactly.
happened to me. My brother did that to my
exactly.
mom. My mom didn't even
exactly.
know. Didn't even know what to do. You know.
Right. And then
I know how all that works.
Yeah. And then they bring somebody that doesn't know the history of the case, and then I've sat in court, and the
mm-hmm.
isolator has told my mother, your daughter
yeah.
doesn't want to come see you. And I'm there
right.
to enforce the visitation. And these people get away with it. And what is it? And that is that is what is so unfair. And this is what I would love to go to every police department and show them that this is what's
yeah.
going on and create awareness so that at least
right.
they know.
Exactly. But that's why James is here, and I really think that he is onto something big time, because this is how it's supposed to be run. This is how, when he talks about that to us,
this is exactly how it is supposed to be. But right now, it
yes.
is none of that. You know, there are so many loopholes in guardianship abuse. There's so many.
Luann,
you know?
Can I interrupt
yeah.
and ask James? Because we are
uh-huh.
limited with our time, and we are grateful
right.
for his time.
Right.
James, what are your main objectives when you are elected sheriff of Pinellas County?
Well, I have so many. There's so much work that needs to be done.
Yes.
But,
yeah. Take a dart,
but,
you know.
But the main overall thing is I think that people have allowed the sheriffs and the police industry to get too big for their own britches and to become too much of a drain on the public. Our sheriff, the one that's in office now, literally since he's been there for 9 years, he's spent $2.3 billion of taxpayers' money punishing people. And to me, that is literally insane. And so they're arresting people for minor offenses. They're throwing everybody in jail. They're just criminalizing so many segments of society, all for nothing. They're building bigger jails. We have mass incarceration. It's really for naught. And if you look at the statistics that we have here in Pinellas, 80% of the crimes that are reported to the sheriff go unsolved. He's not really focusing on crimes with actual victims. So overall, across the board, my main platform position is I want to free Pinellas. I want to free Pinellas from the over-criminalization, the over-arrest, the harassment, the traffic citations, policing for profit, the fact that we have so many deputies patrolling the streets that there's 2, 3, 4 of them sitting around everywhere you look. We're just over-policed as a society because it's not being managed properly. And so I want to get in there, and I want to really whittle it down. I want to end the marijuana enforcement, which takes up about a third of the budget here. Putting people in jail over a plant is asinine. And so there's so many things that I want to do, but basically I want to shrink the police department, just like most good conscious people want to shrink the size of government. And I think that I can do that while at the same time still providing better services, protecting and serving the public, treating them with respect and dignity, and lowering their tax burden by literally over $100 million a year.
Wow.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Well,
and you said you're going to hold the police accountable as well. You're going to hold the police accountable as well. That's a biggie.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there is no police accountability. We had a Pinellas County Sheriff deputy here in Pinellas. His name was Timothy Vert. And this officer was actually one of the ones who brought some of the false charges that I was arrested against me. And he was arresting a guy that was drunk, and the guy was just kind of drunk, and he was putting him in the back of the car, and Timothy Verdon, the deputy, was getting mad at him, and the guy kept saying to him, "You're not a real man, you're not a real man." So the deputy pulls out his gun while the guy's handcuffed in the back of his patrol car and shoots him twice in the stomach because he was mad at him. Then the deputy claimed that he took his gun and tried to kill him. The next day, Galtieri gave a press conference saying that the deputy was a hero for saving his life, and he did exactly what he was trained to do, and that bad person
yeah.
tried to murder the officer. Well, it finally wound up coming out that he didn't do that. He never took his gun. The guy survived, which I guess Verdon wasn't expecting. But what happened to Timothy Verdon is a crime in that he was never really punished. He was arrested for attempted manslaughter. He was released on a $2,000 bond after he was allowed to turn himself in. They dragged the case out. He finally got 2 years' worth of probation and a non-adjudication, which means it's like the case never happened. He was never tried or prosecuted for lying, making the false charges against the guy, for any of it. And this is what we have happening all across the country. Cops get away literally with murder, and that's got to stop, and that stops with me.
Right. And again, if I could just reiterate, we are for the police officers of Pinellas. We are for the men and women in blue who work hard protecting us. But when there are other officers who are doing the wrong thing, as much as we fight for the good ones, we have got to fight to get rid of the bad ones. And anyone who has half a brain would agree with us.
And that's why you should be elected sheriff of Pinellas County.
Right.
Well,
and
people,
and right now I see you on Facebook, and it's James McLennis, C-L-Y-N-A-S, for sheriff of Pinellas County. You could actually go on to Facebook and go in and support him as well. How else can anybody else get a hold of you?
Well, I also have a website out there. It's McLennis for Sheriff, M-C-L-Y-N-A-S for Sheriff .com. And anyone can go out there and read all about all of my platform positions. And what I need is for the United States to donate to me so I can take those funds and educate the voters here at Pinellas so they'll vote for me. What I need is a massive amount of funds to be able to do marketing and campaigning here in order to win. Because I do have myself up against a very tough obstacle. I've got to go against the good old boy system. I've got to go against the entire county's corruption. And I believe I can pull this off very easily if I just have the support that I need from the rest of the country.
Right. And you know something? I mean, the bad cops give the good ones a bad name. Because when there are bad ones, we don't trust them, and it's guilt by association. And there are so many good police officers that are standing and putting their life at risk to protect us in Pinellas County. That is
I'm actually going to dispute that.
Rid of the bad ones.
I'm actually going to dispute that. And the reason I'm going to dispute that is because I have yet to see a single Pinellas County deputy anywhere stand up and arrest another Pinellas County deputy for doing wrong. I have yet to see one file a complaint against one of these dirty, filthy deputies. Now, they'll mutter under their breath, oh, he's not a good cop, but they won't do anything about it themselves. And how can you call
a
good cop?
But, James, do you think they're doing that because they're afraid of retaliation?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why they have to have a sheriff that they can count on that isn't going to run them out of the office.
Exactly.
Because they are a good cop. And those are the cops I'm coming to save. And I'm hoping that we'll get rid of all our dirty ones, and every cop around this country that wants to come work for an honorable agency that's going to do the right thing can come here.
Exactly.
Right.
And we are with you 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. So you're going to try to also get rid of the marijuana laws down there, as you were saying, as well. For that's what they did here in Colorado. They got rid of people being arrested for the marijuana plant, and they sell it recreational. They sell it, and they've made so much money on making it legal that they built a beautiful recreation center right down the street from me, using $40 million of marijuana money for that.
Well, I have a problem with that, too. I've got a problem with everything. But I have a problem with that. When you're talking about legalization in Colorado, everything is so tightly controlled, the licenses that they hand out, who gets to grow, who gets to the enormous amount of taxes that are piled onto it. Yes, the government in Colorado made $80 million in taxes last year. That's great. But what I'm talking about here at Pinellas is something completely different. I'm talking about cannabis freedom, which means that if you want to grow some plants in your backyard, go ahead. I'm not going to bother you. If you want to smoke a little pot at the beach, go ahead. You're not going to be bothered. And I personally believe very firmly that if we have what I call a cannabis-friendly community here in Pinellas County, and we are the only beach community in Florida that is cannabis-friendly, that we can literally double our tourism here, and everybody that lives here can benefit from it. The people that are at the waitress can get better tips. The hotel can have better occupancy rates. All the services that rely on the tourism industry, I personally think that cannabis freedom can save Pinellas County from the devastation of the COVID-19 lockdown.
Yeah.
And it'll improve the mood of everybody in town, too.
And it would definitely improve the business at restaurants too.
So we can actually go to Pinellas County when you get voted in and actually smoke a joint and won't get in trouble.
Exactly.
That's huge. And I don't think anybody should be arrested over a marijuana plant anyway. I mean, it's a plant. That's so ridiculous, you know, to begin
it's
with.
It's safer than alcohol.
Yeah. Oh my God! So you said that you're going to just basically just stop policing for profit. That's huge. I mean, you know, there's so much corruption down in Pinellas County, but everybody needs to follow what you're doing. And I think there's a lot of cleanup to do. There's a huge amount of cleanup to do. And this COVID-19 has made a lot of problems come. But I also think it opened up a lot of venue about what's happening to the elderly. I mean, I'm actually grateful, but I'm not. You know, it's kind of bittersweet because elderly people are just being targets for the guardianship and the COVID-19. You know, and it's really sad to watch everything going on. But in reality, it's being put out there. People are noticing what's going on with our elders.
But,
and
also, Luann, if I could reiterate what you're saying and add something, James, you get it. You get exactly what we are feeling, and that is, I mean, beyond a million times what we want. We are tax-paying American citizens. We don't want anything for free. All we are asking and all that this show is about is for the elderly and the disabled to be treated as they should be, with respect. And they shouldn't be put into a guardianship to make money for these elder attorneys, these judges. And we are grateful that you are running. And I, will do anything that it takes to get you to become the next sheriff of Pinellas.
And that's also as we protect all of these really good attorneys we've had on our radio show that have been targeted by the system. This stands for the same respect that we give to the sheriff department, to the police department that has our elderly's back. You know, we respect these people. And like I say, James, we respect you that you're taking this and you're going forward with that. And everybody, James McGlynis for Sheriff 2020. And Pinellas.
Right.
And that's,
because
as it is
today, as it is today, everyone that's listening to this radio show, the police do not have the elder community's back.
No.
So we need change.
I think that's
if people want to donate to your campaign, can you spell out the website that they need to go to and how they would do that? And also, I want people to know, if you go to here, the website's not up. It was just put up today. It may not be propagated through all the search engines yet. So go back two or three times over the next day or two, two or three days, and you will find it. But, James, if you'd give us that website again.
Yeah, it's MCLYNAS for FOR Sheriff. .com. And it's a very simple thing to remember. But, you know, I have obstacles I have to overcome. Like, as an example, with COVID-19, I was unable to do a petition drive, so I have to pay a fee. Here in Pinellas County, the fee to have my name put on the ballot is $10,300. That's how they keep the small guy from becoming an elected official. They price it right out of the market, and you can only buy yourself onto the ballot, and that's what I'm facing now. So I have until June 8th to come up with $10,000 to put my name on the ballot.
Wow. But, you're going to do it, though. You're going to do this. We're going to help you.
Yeah.
I'm going to catch up on some other shows, too. But we need to keep spreading the word, and we keep needing to get all our good attorneys back. We need to, you know, get our sheriff departments up and running again. And I really think that you are going to show this country how it's done, you know, not to be scared, not and just get up there and get it done. And I think you would make a heck of a good sheriff, you know, by listening to everything that you've had to talk about tonight. I'd be there. I definitely would vote for you, you know.
Oh, there are so many things that need to be done and need to be corrected, and I literally have plans for all of them. You can go out to my website. I have 10 platform positions with extreme details of everything I'm going to do, and every single thing I'm going to do is to assist the community, lower the tax burden, and free Pinellas.
There you go. 619, you're on the air. I pulled you in at the last minute. Do you have a question?
Oh, yes, thank you. I was going to ask if what the opinion is of the police officer in Seattle, Seattle-Tacoma area, Greg Anderson. He had a video on YouTube that went viral about he was talking about the Constitution and that they didn't have the right to, as police, to operate without following the Constitution, that the authorities weren't there weren't in charge, that was the Constitution that they were supposed to be following. Their oath of office was the ultimate authority, not the direct chief or the governor of the state. So I just wondered what the opinion was on that.
Well, I actually am familiar with that case, and I've actually reached out and offered him a job here in Pinellas County when I get elected. He's exactly the type of officer I want to have across the board.
Oh, that's great. That's great, because it's fantastic video. Everybody should watch that video if they haven't seen it. And it also, you know, just it's on YouTube, and you can type in police officer Greg Anderson, and it went viral. He had over 400,000 views within a couple of days. It's a viral video.
You know he got fired, right?
Yes. Yes, he was
fired.
Gosh, oh my God. Yeah, I'm going to go check that out. I'm really going to check that out.
Maybe he'll be working in Pinellas County by next year.
Well, that would be great.
We also want to invite you back to the show a couple times before election, and we want to get you out there, circulated quite a bit, and try to get you some cash in there and try to get you up there to what you, if you could pay for it, you could get elected, because we need more people like you, period. So everybody,
I appreciate that.
Give us your closing thought, James, one more time.
Well, I just want to thank all of you for having me out there. We've got a lot of work to do in Pinellas County, and I really hope that the people of Pinellas welcome me as their sheriff so we can start getting to work and getting this all done.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, that's another segment, you guys, a wrap-up for our show for tonight. James, thank you so much for coming on. I will definitely be keeping in touch with you. And I'm sure Hillary will be in touch with you. And thank you, Elizabeth, for telling me about James. She contacted me on Facebook.
Yeah, we're really, really excited about you taking over.
Well, thank you all.
Exactly.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kathy, for calling in. Marcy, also all the time. Robin, Hillary, thank you, everybody, for coming on to the show. Next week, I'm going to be bringing Blake Tracy on. Everybody's got to be informed about Anna Blake Tracy. She talks a lot about the SSRI drugs and a lot of stuff that's going on with the COVID-19 and all kinds of stuff going on. She's talked about the Columbine massacre and all the stuff that happened. It's really going to be a good show, you guys. And Blake Tracy coming on next week. Anyway, James, everybody, good night. Appreciate you. We will definitely be in touch.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks,
James. Good night, James. Appreciate
you.
Appreciate all the
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you very much.
I Am Mother Nature by Kelly Garrett.
You as well.
There you go. Good night, everybody.
I am Mother Nature. I am the universe. I can make a mirror. Money talks, but let the truth be told. I can't be refunded, exchanged, or sold. Take a walk with me by my rivers, through my trees. Hear the birds singing, feel the sweet summer breeze. I'll show you something.